Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
A little late this morning, but so with apologies, the chef joins us. Kim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac.
What's going on?
How's it in rainy California?
Well, you know, it got into the low 60s and this week, so we're happy about that. The sun came out a little bit, and even though it's cooler than we're used to, I'm okay. I was looking at Northern California on the news. They're not doing so well. Yeah, you know what? California has not been good as a state. First of all, it's really interesting. Well, not really interesting, but the way California's finances are set up. I want to say over 50% of the revenue of the state comes from less than 1% of the people in the state. So California taxes, California's budget rests on the beautiful people that live here. And they're leaving the state. They're leaving the state. Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird that you'd see the state set up like that. So if there's a little bit of a net migration out, it's not no bueno. The other thing is that the water infrastructure for the state in terms of reservoirs to hold water and things like that, you would think that that would have been an important part of the state's infrastructure that got developed given the drought. So when we do get a rainy period, like state's undergoing now, that we can capture that stuff. But the state chose to spend it on the high-speed rail that just got canceled. So California got its issues, its own issues in front of it, but and it's still too cool, but hopefully another month and it'll be April, and then we can get into the 70s maybe. So we're excited about that. So, but I don't need to be complaining. Your weather is always worse than my weather. So, but I appreciate you asking, though. Thank you very much.
No, it's interesting. It's just raining or burning.
You know what? That's.
It just isn't the way it used to be when I lived there, but and it's too bad because man, it's a gorgeous state.
Yeah,
and
well, some of the burning happens. Some of the burning happens every year, but
yeah.
I do. I one of the things if you read, wealthier people now want to put their homes in much more remote places, and you have more of that type of building going on. And when you do that, you can't get to them quick enough and things like that. So that's part of it. And then you have kind of freak things that happened, like up in the city of Paradise. You have a combination of wind and fire. That city's been around for a long, long time. But given the amount of fuel around the city and then the way the winds were and the way the fire started, you know, you had a really bad situation, and that's kind of an anomaly. So it takes a while to read enough to understand it. So, but that's certainly what's been in the news is fire and flood for the state of California. So, yeah, the weather, my nature, she's a bitch.
Yeah.
What is, how about you? Give us the latest from North Dakota. Is it getting any warmer?
Nah, well, you know, it's above, the Schneid. I think it's in the, 10, 12 degree range.
Yes. Yes, that's warm. Come on. You know you can do that. You can do that all day and twice on Sunday.
Very positive. I can actually, see the base of my grill now.
the little steps that it takes that give people hope. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, simple pleasures, baby. Simple pleasures. And Beth gets back from Arizona tomorrow, so tonight's my last night to howl.
So have you been howling? There was a day when you used to howl. You don't howl as often anymore.
I haven't howled this week either since he's been gone. I just been working on the leather and going to the Y, and that's about it. Cooking for myself. I'm going to have Port Townsend oysters tonight. I'm going to fry them up. I ordered them January, and I froze 2 pints, and they freeze beautifully, and they thawed out enough for me to eat a couple raw ones last night, and I just thought, oh my God, these are going to be great. And that's my dinner tonight. I made some Roma lard sauce, you know, that we put on the crab cakes and stuff.
You bet.
And some cocktail sauce. So I'm going to feast on oysters and a bottle of wine tonight.
Whoa.
I'm going to drink the whole goddamn bottle of wine.
So how do you set out to do that? Is that how this is working out? You're planning on doing a...
I drink a bottle of wine. It's no big deal. But yes, I Beth does not like oysters. I love them. I can eat them raw, cooked. It doesn't matter. And these are nice plump ones. They're called mediums, which it makes no sense. They're a grading method. But medium seems to be bigger than smallest. You can go figure that. I can't.
I've never been an oyster guy, but both my sons who work for Kim love them, and I've never been so much. And but they're both fanatical about them, and so maybe I might be doing something wrong.
They're aphrodisiacs, you know.
Well, I know that, but how do you? I mean, is there anything? Did you do anything special with them in terms of, or because pretty much it's crack the shell, and you got either some kind of hot sauce, you know, cocktail with horseradish or something, or some other concoction. Did you do anything different with yours?
None.
Really?
None. And you crack the shell. When I got them in fresh, I ate a pint right out of the jar. I made up some cocktail sauce and a little lemon and just put them in a big soup spoon. And one at a time, loaded up with cocktail sauce, a little squirt of lemon, and slurped it down, chewed on it, of course. I like to chew my oysters. And that's it. Now, the ones tonight are certainly good enough and fresh enough to eat them raw, but I've had this hankering for fried oysters. I'm going to dredge the oysters in seasoned breadcrumbs, and then just dip them in olive oil at about 350-degree olive oil, and fry them up. And then I have two sauces to dip them in, the cocktail sauce and the remoulade sauce. My favorite is the remoulade sauce.
Of the two. Can you go over the remoulade sauce real quick? You don't need to do it in detail. It's on the if you go to the, is it the blog or the read board?
I look on the page.
Hold on. I can never remember, but I know it's, all right, you talk about remoulade sauce and I'll locate where it's at.
Well, your base is mayonnaise. You have a little lemon juice. You have capers. Those are little flower buds. They're green and they're pickled. So they have that salty, pickly, briny taste. And I dice up a pickle real fine, some green onions, parsley, and geez, did I miss anything? I said garlic. Yeah. And you mince the garlic. You mix it all together. You let it sit overnight so all the flavors get together. And man, it's killer. And don't be shy with the capers. You can buy them in any grocery store. 2 days ago, I went and bought a small little jar, about a 4-ounce jar, at our grocery store in town here. It's just nice sauce to have with fish, with crab cakes, shrimp, oysters, you call it. It doesn't matter. It's my version of a tartar sauce, but the capers and garlic,
that's better.
Kick a little bit.
Yeah, I would tell you without a doubt it's better. You can find it on the blog page of Almering Radio. If you just scroll down a little bit, you'll see the Almering Radio Head Chef's Cookbook, Kim and Beth Holmes. If you click on that, you'll see a picture of Kim standing in front of his bar in his lab coat. And, yeah, you check him out, Uncle Mountain right there, and then you'll see something that says, just click here. And if you click there, it takes you to all the recipes, and you can peruse them. And so you can find everything from Juicy Lucy to pina coladas to plate with steak, to potato salad, to remoulade sauce. So you can find it all there. I should put it on the read board too, so you can find it in either place. That's making sense to me right now. Email. Mac, is it possible that he walk us through his crab cakes? Well, I will answer that question. Yes, of course it is. But just so you know, That recipe is on the website. So Kim, you can go ahead and walk them through, but just so everybody knows,
the key thing, there are a couple of points. If you can buy fresh crab and break it down yourself and skin it and take the meat out, that's fine. But if you buy crab, and it usually comes in 1 pound pasteurized cans, and it's blue crab, or in California you get Dungeness crab, which is spectacular and just as good. It's a little sweeter than the Maryland blue crab, but you want the jumbo lump meat. Now, there's the jumbo lump meat, there's lump meat, and there's claw meat. Now, the best crab cakes are made with the jumbo lump crab, but you can also mix the other two in with it. And the key is to use a baguette to make your breadcrumbs and grind them up fine. And use in the, on the menu, you'll see the portions, but you don't want to use too much breading. You want, and you throw mayonnaise in this mixture, and you make this mixture up first before you add the crab, because you want to handle the crab delicately. You don't want to mash it and mush it up. Follow me, everyone.
Isn't that the hard part? Because, I mean, you don't want to turn this into tuna fish, right?
That's right. You don't want to mash it all together.
Okay, so let me ask you, we talked about this, I don't know if we talked about crab, I think we talked about something else, we might have been talking about salmon or something else, and that was, the more you handle it, the...
What? Hamburger is one thing, the more you handle it, the more mealy the hamburger is. You want a little space in there so the juices can flow through it.
Got it.
Okay?
Got it. I'm with you.
But with the crab cake, as you form it, now I've had crab cakes in restaurants. In fact, one on the docks in Baltimore in this open air market where they make big crab balls and they drop them in a deep fryer.
Oh.
My preference is I'll take about 4 ounces of the crab cake mixture, and I'll form a little kind of like an oval, and then I'll put some butter or oil in a skillet. A cast iron skillet is what I use, or if you have a flat griddle, you can use that too. And then you put it on and then you lightly press it down and you cook it until you see the edges of the bottom starting to get brown, about 2 minutes. And then you flip it over and it should be golden brown on the top, and another couple of minutes. Because when you buy crab in a can, it's already pasteurized and cooked. It's not raw. So what we're doing is we're heating it up without drying it out and overcooking it. And some people put a little whatever seasoning you want. It could be that Old Bay seasoning, which is a Baltimore seasoning that they sprinkle in crab mixture.
Are you a fan of that?
It's either or. I never used it. I wanted the crab to shine. I would put a little bit of lemon juice in the mayonnaise, and maybe a little splash of sriracha.
Ooh.
Some people use Tabasco. Some people put a dash, and I mean a dash of Worcestershire, in with the mayonnaise. And I think I diced up a little minced a little red pepper, red bell pepper, for color. And I think there's some parsley in there too. But mainly it's crab is the dominant portion, and the breadcrumbs a little bit, and egg, a little egg. And you mix all that together before you add the crab to it, and then you dump the crab in and you throw it through your fingers, lightly toss it so it mixes thoroughly. Does everyone understand that? That's the key, because you don't want to break up the lump crab meat.
I understand.
And then you have a kick-ass crab cake. And that Romelard sauce is what you want to use on that crab cake, with that crab cake.
I can testify for everybody. It is it's delicious, and I'm a huge fan of the remoulade sauce. So okay, so that's a crab. So how about cooking it?
How about cooking it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I like to cook them in a little. I would say I'd put a little olive oil, like maybe a tablespoon of olive oil, because you don't want to float it in olive oil. You just want it so it sears the crab cake. You preheat your pan to about medium high heat, because if it's too high, it'll burn. And the inside won't warm up properly, so you don't want it. You want it medium high. And then you put your crab cake in the cast iron skillet for a couple of minutes on one side, and then flip it over, brown it for a couple of minutes or so on the other side. And then you plate it and serve it with the remoulade sauce. And that's how we used to do it.
Wow.
And but it's real easy to do. Like I said earlier, I've had them on the docks in Baltimore where they've been deep fried, but that's not my favorite way to do it because it's too much crust. And I like
the crust though. Does that make me a bad person? I mean, like, so when you say too much crust, what is that? Because that to me is one of the art forms of it. It's the there is some crust on it, and yours had a little bit, but not too much.
Yeah, you want the crust. That's why I cooked it in olive oil and cast iron, because you want to get that little crust, but you don't want it to get too thick. You know, you want to have a little bite to it, but you still don't want it to splinter. Like if you dropped it in the deep fryer, like a piece of fish or fish and chips. Okay?
Got it. My guest today is the chef. He's on. He's sounding very kind of calm this week. You know, is there a reason for that? You sound very peaceful. Like you're like,
I
just got done.
I'm in a very zen Shintori mood today. I am, quite frankly, getting tired of this weather.
Uh-oh. And that's not very zen.
I'm trying to be calm about it. It's just, it is what it is. So you adjust your attitude and just count the days till May 1st.
Baby.
I've been alone here for a few days and doing my own cooking, and I've absolutely loved being a bachelor. if you're listening, Beth, I'm anxious for you to come home, but I've been having a good time. Eating all the stuff that she can't cook or eat.
Uh-oh. Now, you need to be careful with that, because normally when you do that, bad things happen.
I'm not messing with the sodium.
Okay.
Sodium crazy.
All right.
I did have a steak the other night.
Uh-oh.
In your honor.
Well, thank you very much.
I bought a ribeye.
Ooh.
Bought a little Knorr Bernays sauce,
which we love,
and just had a great time, and had that and a salad with cucumbers, tomatoes, onions, and lettuce, and olive oil with a little balsamic vinegar mixed in. Very, very low sodium, healthy meal. Lots of protein.
So was it as good as you thought it was going to be?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I cooked it in the cast iron skillet. and which have a big 12-inch cast iron skillet. And I absolutely love cooking steaks and skillets. Because it sears, you know, no fat runs down in between the grates. It stays right in the skillet and sears it shut. And I can turn it on super high and smoke up the house. And Beth goes crazy, but that's how you got to do it. And then flip it once. Got it nice and medium rare. And a little even on the rare side of medium rare. And lathered in Bernaise sauce. Just went nuts.
What did
the whole damn thing about 12 ounces.
What did you have with it?
Just a salad. That's it. No baked potato, no veggie, just a salad with, you know, a little cucumbers and tomatoes and onions in the salad. And that's it.
Wow.
With some romaine lettuce.
With some romaine lettuce. The pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff. I watched your goddaughter Colleen swim yesterday.
Oh, how did she do?
She finished second. I want to say the relay team finished first, and it was a dual meet, so with another school. So they beat them in Colleen swims a 100 free.
And ooh, that's a tough race.
It makes me laugh because she was dog paddling like a little bit over a year ago and came home and said, the swim coaches want me to come out for the swim team. I said, well, do they know you can't swim very good? I said, I know you look like a swimmer because you're long and slender, but you're a rock. She's like, Dad. I said, just speaking the truth, like, are they going to get upset when you get in the pool with floaties on? She's like,
oh, God. You're too much.
She's like, no, I'm not. But now, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't say this in front of her, but she's a little stud muffin, man. When you play water polo,
yeah,
that's legit. And water polo practice is this, right? You get in, you warm up, right, by swimming. Then you do drills. Then you scrimmage. Then you swim. That's water polo practice, right? Hello. And so now it's just swimming. And so water polo got her in great shape to do it. I didn't know this, but she swam the breaststroke too. I said, oh, you did? She goes, yeah, I almost caught so-and-so. I said, oh, I didn't see that. She's like, yeah.
Is she still doing water polo?
It ended about 3 weeks ago. So from water polo.
Oh,
Colleen will, I mean, she plays sports year-round now. She plays, and of our kids, she was not involved in anything athletic. She didn't play, like, little kid soccer. She had no desire to play that. And she started playing volleyball in middle school. And then in high school, they saw her. Here's a long, slender girl. Oh, you must be a swimmer. Well, not really, but she is now. And so what happened was last spring, the swim coach said, hey, why don't you come out and swim? You don't even, you know, you don't just come and be on kind of the beginner thing and just learn how to swim. And, you know, you don't even have to swim in the meets. Just come and swim, learn. And so she said, okay. 2 weeks later, she's in her first meet, right? Somebody's moving her cheese, right? Somebody sold her a bill of goods. So then the water polo coach sees her like, who are you? I'm Colleen. Hey, I want you to come out and play water polo. What? I've never played water polo. It doesn't matter. You can learn. And so she's gone from volleyball to water polo to swimming now. And so the swimming stuff, those are kick-ass sports, man. Those are kick-ass sports. Yeah, so it's pretty funny to watch. Now, my daughter, the three-sport athlete, so anyhow. So it's still fun to go watch, you know, to go. to
yes,
go,
it is.
Go watch her play. So anyway, that going on. Another question about crab cakes.
Yes.
The crab cake thing has me salivating right now. And I like crust, too. Could Kim be a little bit more specific about the cooking instructions? How high is the pan if I'm going to sear it if I want more crust? Okay, so let's talk about that. So you're going to cook your crab cakes. How high do you want the heat if you're going to sear it a little? If you only want a little bit of... And that's kind of a delicate art, right?
Yes. About 350 degrees to 375 max.
Wait a minute. We're baking these? We're not frying them?
We're frying them on the top in a cast iron skillet on the top of the stove.
Yeah, how am I going to know 350, 375? What is that, medium? I don't know.
It's medium high heat.
Medium high heat. Okay, I'm all right with that.
Medium high heat. It'll be about 350. And if you take a pinch of the breadcrumbs and drop them in the oil, they'll start to sizzle.
Okay. That's my little test.
That's your test, and you only want about an eighth of an inch of oil on the bottom of the pan. That's a very little. That's about probably 2 tablespoons of oil, 2 to 3 tablespoons of oil. That's all you need. You're going to get a spectacular crust, and you leave them on there until they get a dark golden brown on one side, about 2 to 3 minutes. And then you flip them over. You'll see it. You'll know right away. You don't want it to get a chocolate brown, just a golden brown. Okay? And then you flip them over, and you'll see the top is beautiful crust. And then you do the same to the bottom. And the middle, that circle around it, you're making like a hamburger type of patty,
right?
Not as flat. You want it to be at least an inch tall. The crab cake at least an inch tall.
Okay. And so here's my question. I do that on both sides. When I do it on the second side after I flip, is my crab cake done at that point? Or do I turn the heat down and I'm going to let it cook for a little bit?
You cook it on the same heat. You don't turn it down.
Okay.
Because if you turn your heat and the oil gets too cool, it'll soak into the crab cake. You want it to crisp and seal the crab cake.
Got it.
So the oil has to be medium high heat.
Okay. And so once I sear and crisp up both sides, I'm done.
You're done. You pull it out, and you can put it on a piece of paper towel. I personally just pull it out, and you can put it right on the plate.
Got it.
It should be just perfect.
Now, do I have to let the crab sit for 5 minutes, or can I go ahead and?
No. No, you don't need to let it rest. You put it on the plate. You put it's usually 2 4-ounce crab cakes. That was our portion at the restaurant. 2 4-ounce crab cakes and about 2 tablespoons of Roma lard sauce. I'm one of those guys who hates to get served anything that is supposed to have a sauce on it, and they don't give you enough sauce.
Oh my
it
god!
It's off.
It's the worst. You know what? In those little stupid containers they give you now at restaurants and stuff, those things really bug the shit. Do I really have to ask you for 4 of these things?
Yeah. And when they do, And when I see it coming, they sit it down. I say, bring me a couple more of these
bad boys.
Sauce right now. And my wife kicks me under the table. Don't be so rude. Well, God damn it, Beth, you know?
I know, look, I know they're, like, trying to portion control so, you know, the servers don't give out too much so they can make more money, but come on, man.
No, you know what it is?
What?
What it is? The chef is telling you, you don't need but very little of my sauce to go with your so-and-so, whether it's a steak or a piece of fish.
But I thought it was what I liked. I thought I mattered.
Well, that's what I thought. But the chef, the chefs in the fancy restaurants, they undersauce everything that goes out, unless you ask for more. You know, don't be shy with the sauce, please. Or give me an extra side of sauce. I'll tell them before they go back, I give them the order. That's one of my orders. Bring extra sauce, please. But
yeah,
you never got that when you came into Sanders.
You got what you wanted. That was your gig. And so, no, it's just, and then you know, and then if you drive away, especially if it's fast food, I won't say fast food, but you can eat pretty good stuff, but things like Chick-fil-A and things like that. If you happen to drive away without enough of whatever, just ruins the whole thing. Ruins the whole thing.
I've been known to check before I pull away from the window.
You have to.
And then, if it's not right, I put the bag in and I tap the window and say, hey, this isn't right. And I tell them why.
You have to.
Oh, don't, sir.
I know, again, if you don't do it, you ruin the whole meal. And normally when you go, right, you have it in your head, the taste you're going to get, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then you get home and you're irritated. I don't like that. Here's another email. Steak in a skillet. I've not been a big fan, but I've heard the chef speak of it on numerous occasions. Could he go over the finer points of it? Because I'm a huge steak fan, but it is my least preferred method of cooking a steak. I would rather broil it than fry it. Could he contrast those? Because I, like him, live in the northern part of the country. We don't grill year-round. I wish I could. So when I do indoor cooking, especially steak, I have found that I screw it up less combining a digital meat thermometer and a broiler, and I can adjust the elevation of the steak to sear it at first and then bring it down to slow cook the rest of the time than I can in a fryer. Interesting.
Well, and he's absolutely right. I might suggest that he starts on top of the stove with a cast iron skillet and sears the both sides and then stick it in the oven, in the middle of the oven underneath the broiler to finish it off, or have the oven at 450 and let it finish off in the oven for 10 minutes with your digital thermometer in there. Or if you have a broiling pan, which all ovens do, where you put your steak on, you put it under the broiler, and the heat is coming from the top. And that is the way it's cooked in all the high-end restaurants that have the heat from the top at about 1,000 degrees, 800 to 1,000 degrees. These burners get that hot, and they have it on a little, it's on grates, but then they pull it out, and then they'll flip the bird, the steak over, and shove it back in to broil the bottom. And that's how a lot of the high-end restaurants cook their meat. So cooking it in the oven under the broiler is an absolutely great way to do it. It doesn't splatter like it does when you cook it on top of the stove. I have a hood with a fan, but it still splatters, and I still have to wipe down when my wife is very...
Well, you know, to me, I'd be curious to do a little experiment now, because the broiler, at least I could watch it, right? I can watch the level of it as it sears, and I can make that perfect. So to me, I'm just so why do you like to do it in a skillet as opposed to broil it? Because to me, it would be easier and to control, especially the searing part of it, which is the difficult part, I think, because you sear a steak in a broiler sunny side up. You can watch the whole thing as opposed to kind of guesstimating in a fryer, and that you do the same kind of guesstimate on the grill as you kind of peek at the meat as you're doing it.
I guess I got started cooking with cast iron for my grandparents, and then when I got into the restaurant business, that's how I cooked my steaks. They all cooked them on top of the stove, and then the method turned around to where they had these broilers that weren't in stoves, but they were broilers that were above, you know, like a cheese melter kind of thing, but they're broilers, and people cook their steaks in those. So either way works. It's a matter of preference. It is very easier to control in a broiler situation, especially if you have a thermostat there. You still have to flip your steak to broil the bottom part. So you got to pull it out, flip it over, and put it in again. You can control it quite easily that way too.
Okay.
It's just a matter of preference for me.
Right. Well, I think for those of us that have lesser skill on the grill, I didn't intend to rhyme that, but it did. For those of us that have that affliction, you know, that we're not expert, you know, chefs, every little bit of that helps to cook. And what I guess my biggest concern is the consistency of being able to cook it well every time. I'm pretty confident on a grill. I can do that. I'm not as confident in a skillet that I can do the same thing, because there's always that challenge of, okay, I've seared it. Now, how long do I leave it in there before I scorch it? And that always makes me nervous. And I think with a broiler, for me, I think that guy's idea of I can sear it and then I can drop it down and I can use a digital heat thermometer and I have a little bit more confidence that I'm not screwing it up. I think that that appeals to me and my penchant for screwing it up.
And he's spot on. He's spot on. My favorite way is on the broiler. On my grill is to sear it and then take it off the direct heat and let it finish in direct. That's my very favorite way to do it now.
So that's on the grill, right?
That's on the grill. Right. But in the winter time, you know, I it's easier, and I guess I'm a little lazier, and I've done it for so many years that, you know, I get it hot, and just bingo, bango, bongo, it's done.
Well, you know, the other part is you know how to do that. If I knew how to do it, I'd probably opt for the easier option too, but I'm always respectful of my ability to screw it up. And so, because of that, I would probably opt for a little bit more cautious approach. And I would say broiling gives you more control and, you know, and especially more optical control. And I think for novices or, I won't say novices, but if you're less than an expert, I think that's not a bad thing.
No, I think it's a great idea. And I'm glad he brought that up because, you know, if you have a broiler in an oven, you know, use it, take advantage of it. That's a good way to do a thick steak.
Yeah, there you go. And thick steaks are their own unique challenges, you know, as well. Yeah. I mean, that's not, cooking thick steaks is not easy. And so, interesting. All right, sir, anything else? What did the hockey team do in the second game against Duluth? Did they win or lose?
They lost. They lost. They shouldn't have, but they had 2 5-on-3s, and Duluth scored 2 power play goals.
Yeah.
They're in Colorado College tonight and tomorrow, and it's on CBS Sports nationally tonight.
Do they have any chance to make the playoffs?
Yes, they do.
Oh.
They're number 18 in the pairwise. They have to get down to 14. They got to pretty much run the table.
Right.
They've got 4 more games left. They've got to run the table. And then they have a real good shot at getting an at-large berth. And you know, if they do, they'll be host the West Regionals in Fargo at Shields Arena.
That's always a good time. All right. Always a good time. Always a good time. All right, sir. First of all, thank you very much for the visit and a little bit to think about with all the broiler talk. So thank you very much for the insight.
Okay. Thank you for getting me stoked up, so to say.
All right. Have a good day. I'll talk to you.
I'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
You bet. That is the man, the myth, the legend himself, the All-Marine Radio head chef, Kim Holmes. The Gunner. After a day off, he joins us next. Don't touch that dial.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue, but it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.